The Politocrat Daily Podcast is now on Pandora. It's great to be part of the Pandora family. You can listen to this podcast right now on Pandora or wherever you get your podcasts. So please subscribe and thank you for your support. Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Sunday, December the 27th, 2020. On this edition of the Politocrat, 2021. It is almost here, just days away. Do you have any plans about what you're going to be doing next year? Any ideas about how things are going to shape up for you? That is what this episode largely will be about, as well as looking at the critical Georgia runoff races in the U.S. Senate, as we are now just over 1 week away from those two runoffs in Georgia that really could shape much of what happens in the next 2 to 4 years and beyond in the United States. All of that coming up next. In a calendar year full of very much death, a year full of loss, a year full of pain. One name to add to that very sorrowful list is K.C. Jones. K.C. Jones was a winner. He was the legendary National Basketball Association head coach for the Boston Celtics, for whom he also played. K.C. Jones died at the age of 88 on Christmas Day of this year. K.C. Jones was a legend, the master of cool, and the master of championships. He had won 11 of his 12 NBA basketball championships with the Boston Celtics, including 2 as the head coach of the Celtics in the 1980s. K.C. Jones was somebody who was personable, affable, a hardworking, demanding coach, and somebody who really was a carer. He cared about people. He cared about the players he played with and the players that he coached. K.C. Jones was a man of strategy and a man of basics. On the basketball court, he demanded nothing less than excellence. And his temperament showed you. He led by example. K.C. Jones is a huge loss. A huge loss to the NBA family, and his loss will be felt. And he is somebody who I will never forget, even as a New York Knicks basketball fan. He would walk the sidelines with the cool, calm confidence. You knew that you were in good hands with K.C. Jones. And his players really did play for him, and they loved him. The NBA family is in mourning. The loss of K.C. Jones is one that will be felt for a long time. One of the true pros in the game of the NBA and in life itself. K.C. Jones passed away once again on Christmas Day of 2020. May K.C. Jones rest in power. My deepest, most heartfelt condolences to the family of K.C. Jones. Well, what a year. What a year. My goodness me. Here we are on December the 27th. Just a few more days left of this wretched year. Oh my goodness. I bet you cannot wait. I know I can't wait to get out of this year. So many people have lost lives. You probably know somebody who has lost their life this year. And it doesn't have to only be the coronavirus. It could be anything. And it's easy sometimes, quite frankly, to lose sight of that. That the coronavirus, which has, I think, become the number one killer of people in the United States now. That is not the only thing, of course. I hate to say it like that, the only. There are so many ailments and illnesses that kill people, not just here in the United States, but anywhere in the world. So whatever happened to you in this year that was not positive, whatever happened to you this year that was painful, that was heartfelt, that was deeply painful, I should say, that really hurt you, I want to send you my personal support, and to say that I am with you, even though I don't know you, even though I've never met you. I do think it's important that we must acknowledge each other in our good times and in these difficult and painful times that we are going through. So I just hope for you that the pain eases for you. Whatever level of adversity you have been through, particularly in 2020. And I hope that eases for you. I hope that the pain becomes less for you and it subsides for you. And whatever challenges that you may be going through right now as you listen to me, and whatever challenges you may go through beyond, I do wish you the greatest fortification and strength and love and peace and perseverance in these times. There are people who are going through what you are going through. There are people who are going through what you are going through. Know that you are not alone, even though it feels as you are alone. Comfort and support are very important at this time of year, but at any time. And so I want to say that you will always, always have someone here at the Politocrat Daily Podcast to hear you, to speak to you, to acknowledge the not so good times, as well as the good times. Because the good times, after going through the pain and the suffering and the loss, can be that little bit sweeter, even in such a bitter year as this one. ...2020 is almost finished, and so I do want to talk about this a bit here, as this is the final Sunday of 2020. So much has changed, of course, in 2020, and it's going to continue to change in 2021. Things aren't going to go back to the quote-unquote way they were before. There is not any such thing as normal, at least I don't think so. And there certainly isn't going to be a return to quote-unquote normal when next year arrives. Even with a vaccine, we are still going to have to behave differently. We're still going to have to wear masks. We're still going to have to physically distance. And we will probably be doing this for the entirety of 2021. And I know that's a bitter pill to swallow, right? To realize that we will be doing this perhaps, for the bulk of 2021. And everybody will not get vaccinated in 2021. I mean, that's another bitter truth that is not being acknowledged. We have countries on the globe who will not see a lot of people in their countries vaccinated. One of the things that Dr. Cindy Duke and I spoke about, and one of the things that she raised recently on this podcast, was about the vaccine movement, the people's vaccine movement, and the important realization that in poor countries, no more than 10% of the people will get this vaccine, whichever one it will be. So that means that 90% of the people in poor countries will not be vaccinated. Because richer countries have stockpiled and purchased billions of dollars of vaccine. And these corporations that have been behind the vaccines, cultivating them, are selling to the highest bidders, you know, to the richest countries, and they are stockpiling them. Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, some other richer European countries. And so that means that the vast majority of the world, which is the poorer countries of the world, will not have its citizenry vaccinated. Again, 90% of the people in each of the poor countries on the planet will not get a vaccination. That's really a huge blow. I mean, to call it a huge blow is trivializing it, isn't it? The reality that most of the people on the planet won't get vaccinated. I mean, we have to do so much better than that. So much better than that. This can't be a solely, predominantly rich and predominantly white experience in terms of you get the vaccine and you get the vaccine and you get the vaccine. We can't have that. But inevitably, that is what this is, you know, this vaccination racism and this vaccination classism. And we really aren't doing the world a service, and we're not doing ourselves a service at all. We're doing ourselves and the world a great disservice when we only vaccinate, 20% of the world, 30% of the world? That's not going to cut it, is it? It's just not. If we want to get rid of a virus, or we want to reduce its spread and its potency and its contagion, then only vaccinating the richer countries of the world, which again make up less than half of the world, is not going to get it done. How is that going to possibly work? This segregation on vaccination. That's really not going to work, is it? What do you think? We'll see. We'll see what happens. And we'll see if this vaccine is going to be for free. And spoiler alert, Dr. Cindy Duke, who I spoke to on this podcast just a few days ago, has already told you what the answer to that question is. Not that you probably didn't guess already what the answer would be. So what are you going to do in 2021? I mean, then the year is almost over here, 2020, and what are you going to do? I mean, lots of things I want to get done in 2021. I do make New Year's resolutions, haven't done them quite yet. Have you kept any of yours? Did you keep any of your New Year's resolutions in 2020? And do you typically make New Year's resolutions, if at all? This is applicable to those of you who do. So for those of you listening who make New Year's resolutions, do you typically make them the year before, or do you wait until the new year begins to make them? I actually think it's a good thing to make New Year's resolutions before the new year begins. You have a clear path, a clear idea, and then you hopefully don't break those resolutions. I made, I think, 4 New Year's resolutions going into 2020. And I broke one of them, of the 4 that I made. The other 3 that I made are still intact, which I'm proud of, actually, as I puff out my chest here, that you cannot see, obviously, but you can't hear someone puff out their chest. But that is something that I kind of take pride in. One of them I'll share, which is I went the whole year. Well, there's still a few more days left. I went this entire year. I mean, this may sound like a really silly New Year's resolution or not. I mean, New Year's resolutions are very personal. So obviously, what may sound significant to me may not sound very significant to a lot of other people, including yourself, perhaps. But I said, New Year's resolution-wise, that I would go the entire year without eating chicken. Yeah, no poultry at all. And I have done that thus far with 4 days or so to go. If you don't include December 27th, 2020. There are 4 more days after that, though. So it's really 5 days, I guess, including today, to go in this year. And still no chicken whatsoever. Now, again, that may sound really fluffy and silly, but I wanted to do that. I'm like, I'm going to go this whole year and I'm not going to have any chicken to eat. And, you know, a lot of people in the world don't get food to eat, don't get to be that choosy, right? Because, of course, there's so much hunger in this world. And, you know, look at this country here in the United States. You know, I'm saying that to you amidst a backdrop of millions of people right now who don't have the luxury of being as discriminating as I do. To be fair, I did make this resolution in 2019 before this pandemic really hit the world as it has now done. So perhaps in hindsight, a decent resolution. But now, as we get to the end of 2020, me talking about chicken, wanging on about chicken, may not be the greatest thing since sliced bread, for example. I hope I'm not coming across insensitively, because I apologize for that. Now, there is such a thing as first world problems, and I hate that term, but there is something to it. It's really about privilege, isn't it? And some of us are very fortunate. Having said what I said prior to this portion of this particular episode, you know, I recognize that. I do know people who have gone through a lot. I've gone through different things this year. We've all gone through things, but I'm sure that the kinds of things I've gone through pale in comparison to a great many people who have really suffered this year, really suffered. And again, as I said earlier, I'm really mindful of that. And we need to put our arms around each other, because we've done a lot of great things this year, in spite of all the very painful moments. You know, we've got rid of Donald Trump here in the United States. You know, a vaccine or vaccines plural have come up already. Now, a little bit quick, and we'll find out what happens. But people have started to be vaccinated. I think those are good things. These all happened in the past, you know, within the last 2 months. So, you know, those are good things. And I don't forget those at all. And there are other positive things happening, but we've still got a lot to deal with. But yeah, that was one of my New Year's resolutions, you know, and I've managed to keep that one. So, you know, again, it's just to say, you know, have you managed to keep any of your New Year's resolutions in 2020? I think I'll probably put that up to a poll, won't I, on Twitter, at the Popcorn REEL. Yeah, I think I'll do that, you know. What am I if I'm not a pollster? For those of you who follow me on social media, on Twitter, at the Popcorn REEL. I mean, you know, polls are just, you know, I'm surprised I'm not a pollster myself in actuality. Although, you know, I'm the one that rails against polls, and I did all year long. And here I am on Twitter doing polls. Not quite the same kind of thing, but it's a poll nonetheless. Then the question I will put up is, have you, you know, are you making New Year's resolutions for 2021? I won't put up, have you broken any, because the year is almost out, and, you know, this year, oh my goodness, this would be the year to break those resolutions, wouldn't it? You know? I mean, once this pandemic hit us, that was really all she wrote, or all it wrote. I don't want to put it to be, I don't want to genderize this. You know, this is, we do this so much in our culture, right? We usually put a female name to something that's negative, or, you know, property. You know, it's a very sexist and patriarchal thing, and misogynistic thing as well, that we do, and do it in a very, you know, automatic way. It's so ingrained in us and in the culture and the society and the patriarchy. So that's what we do. We, oh, she's a fine vehicle. She's a fine, you know, a boat. We'll call it, you know, some, you know, a name that's inevitably female, or we, you know, they're men's names too, but inevitably it will be, she's a great machine, you know. Like, no, come on. Stop genderizing this stuff. Anyway, you know, it's, this is an ongoing thing that we have to get rid of, this naming, putting female names on thing, you know, on Mother Nature, you know, Mother Nature, I just said it, you know. Oh dear. Anyway, as I struggle here to be articulate. So yeah, I'm going to ask on this poll that will circulate on December the 27th, 2020, on Twitter, at the Popcorn REEL. Have you made New Year's resolutions for 2021? Or will you? Something like that. But look out for that on Twitter. I'll be right back. And I think I'm going to get more to plans. Or rather, I should say, even the kinds of things I think that people should start to do, that perhaps you yourself should start to do as we head towards and enter 2021. Right after this. Welcome back. I think that when we look back on the year 2020, we will have some pain, relief, and being thankful for the most part, I think. There'll be a lot of pain, a lot of sorrow, time to grieve. We have been doing that in this year, particularly if you've lost someone you know, someone you love, someone you care about. And I think when we look back on this year, we will continue to remember it for mostly the not so good things, the painful things, the sad things, the tragic things. We lost so much this year, so much. We lost people in our lives. We lost people we've heard of or know of. We've lost people who have been murdered by police. We've lost people to gun violence all over the country. We've lost people to so many different types of things, and of course to this coronavirus. Over 330,000 people in the United States and almost 2 million people globally. So we have lost so much. If there are some positive or good things that you can point to in 2020 for yourself personally, please hold on to those. Please do celebrate them. And it is not inappropriate to celebrate the good things in a year like this. It is not. Some people may not, out of respect. But I don't think that if you've had a good year, or you've had some good things happen in the year, where you've also had some bad things happen, if you can find that time to celebrate some of those good things, you can do it. You should do it. But I also think it's important never to forget those that you have lost. And you don't need me to tell you that. Of course you don't forget those that you've lost, you know, that mean so much to you. People who touch your life in a really significant way. People that you love, people that you really feel like you couldn't carry on without. You know, I've spoken to some people this year who have lost so much, so much. And, you know, I know people who are going through, personally know some people who are going through some really difficult things. And I think, again, as I said a little bit earlier, it is something that I've said actually a lot during this year on this podcast, is that compassion and empathy are critical components for human beings, for us as human beings. We've got to have a level of empathy and compassion for people. And I'm talking about people we don't know. I'm not talking about family members, because hopefully you do have some of that for your family members, although I know that there are some families who, you know, don't talk to each other. There are people in the families, and you may be experiencing this yourself, someone that you know in your family isn't talking to you, somebody that you aren't talking to in your family, for whatever those personal reasons are. But I'm talking about having empathy and compassion for people you do not know. You know, for people who you see on the streets, for people who have homes and people who do not have homes. To have compassion for those individuals, because no matter what time of year it is, no matter what calendar year it is, people are hurting. You know, people are going through all kinds of things. I think the best thing that people can do is to exercise some compassion and humanity and decency in those situations, and be the best that you can be every day. And I know that that sounds like a cliche, you know, be the best you can be, but, you know, really, I mean, this world is changing a lot, and not necessarily for the better when it comes to all the technology out here that is really going to make a presence in 2021. It's going to be even more in our lives and in our faces. And I'm not saying that technology isn't good. There are some very good things about it, as I have talked about previously, and as you heard Dr. Cindy Duke talk about a few days ago here on this podcast. And I really do recommend that you go back and listen to the Christmas Eve episode, Christmas Eve 2020 episode of this podcast, where Dr. Duke talks about technology and how it makes her medical practice as a fertility doctor much more efficient. And it's also that episode is also on YouTube as well, on the Politocrat YouTube channel. But technology is going to be in our lives a lot, even more so. I mean, obviously it was this year with Zoom, and Zoom I was initially resistant to, you know, and now look, I use Zoom for, you know, a lot of things I do, whether it's work related or whether it's this podcast or whatever else it might be. So, you know, these are these times are going to be very different going forward. So one of the things I think that people should do is, if you are able to do this, is to, if you have a laptop, because there are people who do not have computers, there are people who do not have television sets. In fact, I think a majority of Americans actually don't have a television set, or at least a large number of Americans do not, for example. And this applies beyond the United States as well. A large number of people in other countries probably do not have television sets. And that's not a negative thing. That's not to make a judgment. It's just to state an observational piece of evidence. In fact, there's a lot of people who do not have television sets, and not because, and it could be for any reason. You know, people have laptops now. People have their phones now. They watch television on their phones. This is a new technological age, and it's been here for a while now. People are streaming things. People don't buy Blu-ray discs as much. I mean, I still do. But people, you know, and other people do. Of course you do. And, you know, if you have, if you're a big film fan like I am, a film critic, or just a film fan, a film buff, you still buy Blu-ray, don't you? I mean, maybe you don't. Maybe you do. Criterion Collection. Yeah, I know. And I know you can stream Criterion movies. But I love to have the Blu-ray disc in my hand, and I like to, you know, it's this very tactile thing. It's like vinyl. If you're of a certain age, you remember when vinyl really was king or queen, so to speak. And now vinyl is reintroducing itself, although some people, like myself, would say that it never really completely disappeared or went away. I mean, it just kind of got subsumed and subdued by all of the CD, compact disc mania that came in the 1980s, I think. Yeah, mid-1980s, late 1980s. That's when, the mid-1980s, early 1980s, that's when compact disc came along, and we loved it. I remember feasting on compact discs, and then there was laser discs, and then there was, you know, all these different things, you know, a long way away from the 8-track. The 8-track, you could only play that thing forwards. You couldn't rewind it, as I remember. Then there were cassettes, and I loved cassettes, and you can probably still get cassettes, can't you? I don't know, they probably cost a lot more than they did back in the day. But what I'm saying about laptops is, if you do have a laptop computer, if you do have online access and you have a laptop computer or some kind of computer, desktop or whatever it might be, a phone, if there are photographs or if there are files or if there are things that you have on your drive that you don't need, clear them out. I do this every year, actually. If there's some kind of file or some kind of thing that I don't need on my phone or, you know, computer or whatever, my laptop, I make a point that by the end of the year, at the end of the calendar year, to completely clear all that out. Now, it's not that that's the only time of the year that I do this, but I find it to be a really good thing to do, especially at the end of a year. There's something, for me at least, that is a mental connection to psychologically, it's a psychological connection to purging out the year, at least images of the year or representations of the year. I don't know. I think for me, that's something I do. I like to do that. And I do it during the year as well, but particularly also at the end of a calendar year. I like to just, all the files or lots of files that I don't need or things I don't need, I back them up, or I don't, or I just completely delete them, clear them out of the drive system, clear them out of your computer. I think it's just good to do that. It's kind of this, even on a technological level, it's a type of a cleansing. Same thing if you're someone who has things on your phone, I would say to you that this is the time of year now to clear them off your phone or to transfer them or back them up. Clear them off your phone. start with a clean slate. And of course, there are memories and precious photographs of family, kids, you know, all those kinds of things, friendships, partner, whatever, spouse. You're not going to clear all those out. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is the kinds of things that you don't need on your phone, clear that clutter. It's clutter. Clear it. It's like in your home. Let's say you are in, you're fortunate to have a roof over your head and you live in a home where you are safe as well, by the way, where you are safe and you are comfortable and not someone who is, being terrorized by domestic violence or an abusive person in your life or in your household. So I want to stipulate those things as well, because people are going through a lot. If you are someone who has the comfort of your own home, your own place, and your own space, if you find your surroundings to be closing in on you, or, you know, some people have that, you know, there are people who are hoarders. I mean, I've come across so many stories of people who hoard things to the point in which there is no space in their place, you know. And that's not healthy. It's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for the mind. It's not. There may be, I guess people who hoard, and maybe you hoard. I don't know if you do. I think that there is this comfort in doing that. I don't know. I really don't do that kind of thing. I just think that I would imagine that some of the people who hoard do so because there's maybe comfort in doing it. I don't know. It's difficult to try to do that short of inviting on somebody who actually is a hoarder. And I'm not trying to demonize people who do this. But there's something going on, I think. Perhaps there's things going on behind the hoarding, I would think. We all have habits. We all have things that we do. And I think that as we get to a brand new year, I think that reducing clutter in our minds is so important. It really is. I think that's the point I'm driving at here, is to get to a place, if you're able to, if you're in a safe space to do this, to reduce clutter if you have it. If you don't have clutter in your life, then that's great. But to those who do, to those who do have, a muddled space, for lack of a better terminology, that there's things all over the place or, you know, whatever it might be. Now is the time, if you are able to focus on reducing that clutter, lightening the load beginning today, right now. As you do this, you will find that you feel a whole lot better. More space in a place makes for a happier face. I literally just made that up. But it is true. It is true. It does something to you mentally. And I've heard medical professionals and psychologists say that your space is an indication of how you feel and how you're thinking and what your mind is like. If you have a place that's clean and clear, then I dare say that more often than not, that tends to reflect that your mind is also clear. Now, that's not always true, of course, but it would tend, I think, to lean toward that area. If your place is not so clear and it's cluttered or it's whatever, you know, disorganized, then that would tend to reflect, I imagine, a disorganized mind, an unclear mind, a mind of, I don't know. But that's what I would think that would tend to indicate. And there are psychologists who would agree with me on that. So I do think, to whom this may apply, that it is important to begin now, if you can, if you are able to, if you are in the frame of mind to do this, because that's another thing, to try to unclutter as you head toward a brand new year, so that you can start at least in your space, in your home, in your place, with a clearer mindset and a vision for 2021. Think of the things that you have to do in your everyday life. Think of the things that you think you can do better in your everyday life. Think of the things that you want to do better in your everyday life. As the calendar turns to 2021, what would those things be for you? What would those things be? I think that's the question to give some thought to. And when you have some thoughts on it, and when you come up with those, write those down. I don't know if you do diaries or not. There are people who do. There are people who don't. But I would write these things down. The things that you can do better in your life. The things that you haven't done quite as well in 2020 that you would like to improve on. Write them down. And I don't mean just put them on your phone. I mean actually type them out, really, on a laptop if you have one. Or write them down on a piece of paper. Literally, pick up a pen, and if you've got some paper in your living space, please write it down with a pen. You know, people don't do that very much anymore because we're all on our laptops, or we're using our thumbs for our iPhones or whatever, you know, our phones. So believe me, once you write these things down, it's good to unload them from your mind and put them on a page so that you can see them. And then so that you can conceptualize them better, rather than having all of this swim in your head, in your mind. Because when all of these things swim in your mind starts to race, you may get a little anxious. That's what happens, I think. So it's really good to put these things down on paper. Type them out on your laptop. Even better to write them out physically with a pen on a piece of paper. It doesn't matter how untidy the writing is. It doesn't matter that you, it's just that you get these things out on paper or on a laptop. And I say again, if you can, because this time of year and any time of year, people suffer from severe levels of depression. And literally, depression is something, and I've not faced this, but I know that people who have gone through it, because I've not experienced this, but there are people I know who go through depression, and they literally cannot get out of bed. Literally cannot get out of bed. Perhaps that has happened to you. Perhaps you have experienced that. Or perhaps you know someone who is going through that right now. Maybe you are. Maybe you have a spouse or a partner or someone you know, love, care about who literally goes through that. So to be there for them is important, of course. Very important. But for those of you who aren't going through anything like that, or trying to come out of that existence, that kind of state of being, be sure to think about the things that you want to do in 2021. Think of the things that you would like to do better in 2021. Take stock of the things you didn't do so well in 2020. And think about the things you want to do to be better. To be a better person, to be a better, whatever, you know, whatever applies in your life. Because we all can do this. We all can be better. I don't think anybody thinks, honestly, that they are their 100% best self. Because if there is someone who thinks that they are at the 100% top of creme de la creme everything and they're perfect, they don't exist. And they are lying to you. We go through this life and we spend so much time doing things, good things, not so good things, do some things that are good, doing some things perhaps that we make mistakes on. We all learn. And hopefully we learn from our mistakes, most importantly. And no matter how good we may be, there's always room for improvement. And I can hear some people right now, oh my goodness me, I don't want to do that. I'm quite content. And maybe you are, maybe that applies to you. But there's always room to be better. I guess one of the questions is, how hard does one want to work on that, if at all? If people are in your life and they are telling you, hey, you need to do this better, or hey, I don't like this about you, or hey, you know, I don't know. And if you have more than one person telling you this, that's a cue that you should probably think about listening to those individuals. And even if it is only one person saying that to you, and that person is someone close to you, or a friend that's close to you, or whomever, that still is a cue, perhaps, that you should take into account what someone is saying to you. 2021 will provide, I think, something different for us all to contemplate, but to strive for. I've talked about the importance of agendas, to write down things that you hold very dear and important to you on a political basis. Issues that affect your life and the lives of people in your circle, but the lives of people in general. I mean, it shouldn't only be about you or about me. It's got to be about people beyond our circle. Because that's what the world is. It's a world of all of us, not just us alone. So this is what we have to look at. I think we all have room for improvement, all of us. I do, you do, the people you know do, the people I know, we all do. And the question is, are we going to? With the politics and with the things in life and the agenda items, I keep talking about this with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Let's not wait until 2021. Let's not wait until January 20th, which, you know, now is what? It's 3 weeks away, isn't it? You know, we're just, we're really getting close now. We're just over 3 weeks away from the swearing in of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as president and vice president, respectively, of the United States. So this is, you know, we are coming up on a big moment soon. But I assure you that we should not wait to settle for them to settle in. We shouldn't allow for that. This is an unprecedented year. We've not seen a year like this for a long, long time. Many of us have not seen it ever in our lives. Some people have. Some people have seen pandemics, have seen things affect them and, you know, all kinds of ways. But there's a lot of us who have never experienced this. And I guess we do get exposed and we scramble. But I guarantee you, we can't scramble. I guarantee you, we can't scramble with this agenda that we've worked so hard. Those of us who voted for Joe Biden, we cannot go home now. We cannot. And I guarantee you, we have to keep lobbying. As I keep saying, these three or four agenda items you have, Make sure that you meet with people, Zoom, of course, or whatever, you know. Meet, discuss the three or four things that are important to you, whether it's a right to choose, whether it is criminal justice reform, the environment, the economy, healthcare, whatever it may be, police brutality, all of these kinds of things that are very important among so many other issues, immigration. Discuss that with your circle. Discuss that with like-minded people. Write down those agenda items, those three issues. Discuss them. Ask others in your circle to do the same. Meet. Have meetings, as I've said before so many times here, and plan out an agenda to present as an organization to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Do it now. Do it now. The transition team is still here. This is the time. They're in transition. So what about us? What about you? What about me? And that's really been the theme, I think, for this particular episode, for the most part, is to focus on how we transition into 2021 and the kinds of things that we must do and should do as we move into a brand new calendar year. We have to lobby. One of them is to lobby Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I assure you, Wall Street has already done this. The Wall Streeters, Big Pharma, P-H-A-R-M-A, Pharma, the pharmaceutical industry, they have already lobbied Joe Biden because they are donating to Joe Biden. That is their speech. That is their lobbying power. Wall Street also, among many other entities that care more about billionaires and their corporate profits. Gosh, I can't even say that, can I, you know? Corporate profits. You know, all the billionaires that have made all this money. Jeff Bezos and all these other people, ungodly amounts of money. You know, they've already lobbied. I can guarantee you they have already, Silicon Valley, you know, Apple, Facebook, oh gosh, and that God, the Politocrat is now on Facebook. It's now a Facebook page. It has been for a number of months. I say that with a touch of discomfort. But you can find the Politocrat on Facebook. And I said I would update it. Haven't had the chance to. But I will do so before this year is out. It will be updated, I guarantee. But anyway, look, that's not the important thing. The important thing is we have to lobby Joe Biden and Kamala Harris here in the United States. We have to make our voices heard. We cannot retreat now. And the young people who voted, black people who voted, the indigenous populations who voted, brown people who voted, Asian Americans, we cannot rest on our laurels here. We have to form movements. And I think we have to form intersectional movements as well. I think that's so important. I mean, yes, we should first and foremost focus on our own organizations and our betterment. Black people, I think we should do that. I think that's very important. We have to be, as Malcolm X once said, we have to first, you know, I'm paraphrasing him, first care about ourselves and organize for ourselves before we start to organize and coalesce with others. I think that's very true. That still remains true. And I'm a firm believer in that. We have to do that first. First and foremost. You take care of your family and then take care of the people outside of that and around that. You know, that's very important. And that's different from just taking care only of yourself. That is, you're prioritizing, obviously, your circle of people, your family. And then you go out and offer that, you know, you reach out and do that with others. That's natural. That is the human thing. That's different from voting for somebody based on what you did in your stock portfolio did. That's different, right? That's selfishness. Only about what your stock portfolio did in 2020 and not about the betterment of the entire country. That's different from what I've just said that I paraphrased with Malcolm X. So, you know, with what Malcolm said, it is very true. And in this 21st century, In addition, we also need, once we do fortify ourselves, we need to form intersectional movements, because so much of what we see, so much of who we are, is intersectional. I mean, that cannot be denied. You know, it cannot be denied. So, you know, whether it's members of the LGBTQIA plus community. And, you know, I really want to try to stop sectionalizing people, because when you say of a community, they're part of the human community. We are all part of the LGBTQIA plus community is part of the human family. You know, it's not like, you know, and I'm guilty of this. We put people on satellites. We put people in these so-called quote unquote boxes. And that's not really what we should be doing, right? We should be talking about everybody as part of the human family, instead of saying, oh, this community over here and this community over there and that. I've done it many times on this podcast. I plead guilty. I plead 100% guilty of doing things like this. You know, it's not good, because you tend to isolate and box people up, and we are a human family. So I think we should talk about each other that way. And I get it. You want to identify people, because there are people who, of course, are being oppressed, black folk, brown people, you know, women. And so you do have to call the roll. I'm not saying that you just completely flatten and, you know, erase. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying, I think for me, language is very important. And I'm not just talking about the ability to speak more than one. I'm talking about the kinds of words we use to speak about things, the terms we use, what we use, how we say it, how we write it, how we articulate it. I think that's really more of what I'm trying to get at. But intersectionality is really important. You've got black people who are trans. You know, you've got, I just mentioned trans because black trans lives matter. Black trans lives matter. And in this calendar year, we've lost, 30, 40 black trans people. And there have been some Latino trans people we've also lost. You know, some Latina trans people that we've lost, trans people who are Latino, trans people who are black, who have been killed in the United States this year, 2020. So I do want to say, you know, that's part of intersectionality, you know. I'm a straight man. I'm a straight black man. And then there are people who are, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know how to even phrase, you know, articulate this, speaking of language and articulations, you know, then there are, you have people who are gay black men, you know, gay black women, people say lesbian. That's part of intersectionality too, you know, being a woman and being black, that's intersectionality in a way, it really is. You know? You know, I mean, that's important. You have, you know, white trans, white gay, white straight. I mean, again, this sectionality, right? That's this kind of segmentation. But again, there's intersectionality of interest and things and where our paths intersect. And I think that there needs to be additional movements in 2021 around all of this. Because those are the unifying things. We may not agree on every single thing, and many of us do not. But if there are some key and core things we can agree on, then why not? Why not? It's there for us to do. It really is. when I return, Georgia. Welcome back. Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. That is really going to be the theme of where we are and what we should be and thinking about as we go through these final days of 2020. Just over a week from now, these two Senate races in Georgia will be the eyes of the world. Indeed, they are the eyes of the world right now, at least the eyes of the American world, as I might say. Because, you know, we do think we are the world here in America, don't we? That the only country on the planet that exists is the United States of America. But I think that this, you know, these two races are everything. These two races in Georgia, the first of those being between Reverend Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler, the other being between John Ossoff and David Perdue. These two Senate races in Georgia are going to be very critical. These really are going to determine what kind of presidency Joe Biden has. And these are also going to determine what kind of Senate we have, obviously, here in the U.S. If both Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff win their Senate runoffs against their Republican opponents, we will have a democratically controlled Senate, which means that a lot of the things that have been sitting on the Grim Reaper's desk for the last 2 years plus, if not more, well, the last 2 years certainly, but certainly I'd say even beyond that, will no longer have cobwebs on them as of January the 6th or thereabouts. We will have the capacity to actually pass law in Congress on the federal level that will absolutely make a difference to your life. It truly will. You will have things like the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act passed so that there will be real punishments for people, I hope, for the daring to even do this, because black people continue to be lynched in this country, by the way. Let's not think of lynching only as rope. I say only with really, with quotes around it, but also again with discomfort, because I hope I'm not trivializing this. I don't think I am. You know, there were stories about black people being lynched this year in California. One of them apparently was a lynching. The other one, investigators say, was not, you know. And these are in Klan-held territories or places where the Klan in California here, because this is where they both happened in California, where the Klan runs. I mean, if people think the Klan don't exist in California, think again. The Klan exists in every one of the states in this country. My goodness. You would be awfully naive to believe that somehow the Klan is only in the south of the country. Huh. You've got to be joking. Why don't you go to north of San Francisco here? Not too far away from here, folks. Let's disabuse ourselves of the notion that the Klan only exists in Tennessee or in Alabama or in Mississippi. You know, the Klan is in every state. You know, and especially up in Oregon, Portland and thereabouts. Oh boy, you know, come on, folks, we cannot be naive about any of this. So the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, if we have a Democratic Senate, we will have that passed. It will become law. So many things, I can't even think at the moment. There's so many things that will affect your life differently on a federal level that will get passed. And one of the things we need to put up, again, Speaker Pelosi, with Medicare for All, we need to have that put on the floor. Her speakership election is on the 6th of January. Big, big day, the 6th of January. Big day. I think I may have mentioned this before. Certainly did on Twitter at the Popcorn, R-E-E-L. January 6th is a huge day because you've got the speaker election, the need to have Medicare for All on the floor. You've got to have that, and we'll find out who the speaker is going to be. Pelosi is running again for the speakership, Speaker Pelosi. We'll find out what happens in these two Senate races. And, of course, we'll also have the joint session of Congress and the final confirmation and consecration of the results of the Electoral College. So that should provide a little bit of drama because you'll have a few of these racists jumping up and down, objecting to the result, which is just going to be slapped down, really. But it's just, it's just this, the anti-democratic forces in a fascist country at work is what that is. But these two Senate races are so important. You have a really important opportunity, Georgia, to do this. And to those not in Georgia, you have an opportunity to help, to phone back, to call. I know it's kind of this time of year, it's Christmas holiday, and it's whichever holiday you observe or celebrate or don't. You may not at all. If you're an atheist, then you really don't give a rat's about Christmas, do you? You don't care about all of that. You're an atheist, and I'm not judging that. That's everyone has a right to what they believe and what they don't believe in, as importantly. So, I respect atheists, there's not a theology for them that they tap into. They don't believe in a God, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, not at all, not at all. I believe in a higher power, but. The point is that we have a right to not believe in a higher power as well. So, but my whole point is with these two elections, we have a golden opportunity in Georgia. For those of you who aren't in Georgia, please phone back for John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock. Really, I know it's odd at this time of year because you've got the holiday season and all, but we have to keep putting the pedal to the metal. We really have to. Pedal to the metal and to the metal. We've got to do this. Because this is about the whole country. It's not only about Georgia. This is such an opportunity for us. And the Democrats blew this royally and spectacularly during November's election and before that with the Senate and the House. The Senate and the House is the most underreported thing, I think. That the Democrats really failed on. We had, 12 opportunities to get a plus majority, to turn 4 seats. We needed 4. We needed 4, put it that way. We needed a minimum of a net gain of 4 in at least 12 opportunities, and we struck out. We only got 1 or 2 of them. 2 of them out of a possible 12 that we could have had, and we needed 4. And there were at least 12 opportunities. And I know some of this is dark money. And I know some of it's voter suppression. I know that the Republicans suppressing voters, black voters in particular. I know it was dark money and Mitch McConnell and all. I know a lot of it was because of that too. Susan Collins in Maine mysteriously winning by 15 points, 12 points over Sarah Gideon. Are you kidding me? Sarah Gideon was absolutely all over it during that election campaign, and then she loses by 12 or whatever it was. And Jamie Harrison in South Carolina, and getting whipped by Lindsey Graham. Oh God, that's a really bad choice of words. But you get what I mean. All these races that we were told. That's why I told you, do not believe in the polls. Come on. Something's going on there. And voter suppression is definitely part of that, I think. Among other things, with the money, the dark money, and the influx of money. Mitch McConnell was doing all kinds of stuff with the money. I mean, my gosh. But that's not really been really autopsied the way I think it should be. But we have a chance now, since the Democrats, the leadership has absolutely failed in getting the majorities that it was supposed to. And instead, some of the leadership is blaming you and me. People who care about black lives somehow are getting blamed. You know, people who say defund the police, and they didn't even say abolish the police. I know some people are saying abolish the police. But the folk that the Democratic leadership are talking to are people who said defund them. Now, you may agree with that. You may not agree with it. But the point is, that was the word in the streets here for many of the millions of people who marched, some of whom were attacked by police, some of whom were shoved to the sidewalk by police, women being shoved to the ground forcefully by male police officers. One of them cracked her head on the curb of a sidewalk and sued, and is still going through a lot of injury problems and issues. A man, old man, white man, old man, shoved to the ground in Buffalo by police, his head split open on the sidewalk, and the blood that would trickle out of his head that we saw over and over again on a loop. So when people say defund the police after the assassination of Breonna Taylor, after the torture and execution of George Floyd for nearly 10 minutes, there's a reason why they say that. It ain't because they want to just burn things down. And of course, there are people who would love to see that happen. But what I am saying is that you spit on Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and Rayshard Brooks and many others that I have not even named. You spit on their families when you start to point at people who say defund the police like they're the enemy, like they're the problem. The people who say defund the police are the problem? Or is it the fact that your centrist agenda and your lack of clarity and your desire to be more like the Republicans isn't the issue? And the wishy-washiness and the lack of declarative messaging isn't the issue, which is why the Republicans, who can message the F out of a paper bag, won so many House seats in 2020. And no one's talking about that. And no one's connecting that to Speaker Pelosi. And no one's connecting that also, as I have done actually, connected to the statement that Speaker Pelosi made earlier this month when a reporter had the Manu Raju of CNN, the guy who hardly ever asks a confrontational question of anyone. But somehow he asked an innocent question like, well, what about half a loaf? I mean, you had this deal, you had this structure and 2.2 trillion or 1.8, and Mnuchin had 1.8. Why are you now 908 billion as opposed to 1.8 trillion? And then she gets upset, Speaker Pelosi. How dare you preface the question like that? I won't. If you want an answer, then you must change the way you preface that question. Really? So you're afraid of how a reporter prefaces a question? He wasn't being disrespectful. I've said this before. I know. But you see where the problem is? And then your response to the prior reporter before Manu Raju, who now you don't take questions from anymore, you don't answer him, you don't take his questions now. The prior reporter asked you even nicer than him and said, you know, what went wrong? The problem solvers had a bill, and what went wrong with that? And you talked about bipartisanship so much, and you mentioned that. How many times more do you mention that than the Republicans ever? The Republicans don't talk about bipartisanship, but you did. And you said to people, well, there's a game changer now. The reason why we really didn't do this with the stimulus check and people are starving out here, and she didn't say this, I'm saying it. But she did say, we have a new president now. We have a new vaccine. Like that's going to be what puts food on people's tables. You see where the problem is? I know, I'm really doing a poor job here of stumping for Ossoff Warnock. Oh, you have to vote, Georgia. And I'm so heartened by the fact that over 1.5 million people or thereabouts have already cast a vote in Georgia for this runoff, these two runoffs. So I am pleased and happy about that. But we've got so much more work to do, and I'm going to continue to talk about it over these next few days. Operation Georgia Blue is in full effect. And so I hope that you will keep reminding people to go to electjohn, that's electjohn.com, and to vote Warnock, votewarnock.com. Tell them to go there in Georgia especially, and you too, to donate, to volunteer, to get the word out on your social media channels, your social media channels, to go out there and vote in Georgia. Get the people in Georgia to get out and vote. People are doing so much work right now in Georgia. Stacey Abrams among them, first and foremost. Andrew Yang is doing a lot of work down there. Roland Martin, who I've talked about many times. Roland Martin, doing great work in Georgia right now. A lot of people are. A lot of activists, a lot of organizers. This is the time. Let's get involved, folks. If there's one thing you want to do before 2020 ends, is to get involved with Georgia. People you know in Georgia, call them. Stress upon them the importance of voting. It really is critical to vote in these two Senate runoffs. If you are in Georgia and a Georgia voter knows that voting is the thing to do, and we're not going to let any voter suppression turn us around. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.